Welcome to the first ever Iterate Debug Team Up. I'm Renee Ritchie, and joining us tonight, we have the guiding mind behind Bajango, Mark Edwards. We have the proprietor of Kicking Bear and one half of Aged and Distilled, Guy English. We have the man who brought us Tweety and now Letterpress, Lauren Brichter. And we have, most recently with Double Twist, Sebastian DeWitt. Mark, you've worked in print, you've worked in television, you work in apps now. Are we at the point of going towards the future? Is this a topic for today's discussion?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's difficult to predict where the future is and how long the current multi-touch and glass, you know, input is going. Obviously, we've had punch cards, command line. Command line kind of came about with, I guess, the keyboard and Windows and mouse pointers came along with the mouse. Multi-touch came along with multi-touch technology. It's still a 2D screen that we kind of manipulate things on. So it's Siri. Seems to augment that, but it's very difficult to predict where it's going from here, and if multi-touch will be with us for a long time, or whether it's just a transition. It's on the road to something better. I really don't know.
The way that we interact with computers is mostly a function of the way that the interface is developed, and with an expanded interface, we expand our ability to use and interact with this really rich, vast network of human knowledge and communications. I think it's interesting. I think that the key to communication is really in interaction.
I guess what I find fascinating about all of this is, like, if you look at it, it's such simple building blocks. You know, it's closing a circuit with a keyboard, or, you know, like a single capacitive sensor with a touchscreen. And now with, like, I'm sure you've seen the Mio. You know, just like measuring the slightest electrical impulses of muscles, you know, we're at the point where these simple building blocks are effectively letting us do crazy things. Like, you know, from the outside, it's like telepathy. You know, you can communicate with something or someone around the world without actually moving.
What about the Mio? How does that work?
I don't know. I just saw it today, but I think it just picks up like tiny electrical signals of your muscles. I mean, what I find cool about it is theoretically pick up, I mean, at least this is the way that they describe it. They can pick up the electrical signals before your, you know, fingers start actually moving. So it's almost as if they're reading your mind, you know, because the electrical signals travel so much faster than the muscles can actually move.
Yeah, this is crazy cool kind of stuff.
Yeah, that it requires you to wear an armband, essentially. But it's fairly inexpensive technology. I mean, the pre-order is, quote-unquote, only $150. And their demo, which I don't know how much staging is going on in that video, probably a lot, seems very, very accurate.
Well, and, you know, they're pretty nerdy, too, because they've got a Jedi joke on the page. And the guy's doing the Spider-Man web slinging thing. I'm excited about this. It's really interesting. And they say they've got an API, so I'll probably look into it.
I guess a lot of this stuff existed previously. I think some of this stuff has been used for people with disabilities. Yeah. So I guess this is the more mainstream execution of it, which is awesome. I mean, it looks really good.
Sebastian, you were going to join us on our last roundtable. You couldn't make it. I'm really glad you joined us tonight. As a UI designer, you must be really interested in how things are shifting in terms of the way that we control machines.
Oh, yeah, hugely so. It's also interesting because I'm designing currently on the Android side of things, where you see people experimenting a little bit more with touch interactions. And I'm using the word experimenting as a very gracious euphemism for failure. But it's really quite interesting to see how people, there's a huge drive to sort of look for the next big thing. You know, you have Kinect in the living room with Xbox, and there's all these things like Mio, which Lauren mentioned, which is something where you can sort of gesticulate without having cameras pointed at you, or the name escapes me right now, the Leap, yeah, sort of visual interpreter style thing. I think as a user interface designer, it's very exciting to see technology at large turned into some giant playground where everybody's sort of looking at what's next after this little futuristic multi-touch thing has become the standard. And yeah, very exciting times ahead.
I guess for me, the first sign that we're approaching the next generation of human-machine interface was Siri, because it took the natural language stuff that I was used to from Nuance and from VLingo, and it kind of, it put it into a character, gave it a Pixar-like personality with humor, it made it relatable, and it didn't really seem like what's next, but it seemed like the first crude step towards what's next. Does that make sense, Guy?
Yeah, I'll agree to that. I'd say that it did that before Apple picked it up, when it was just its own company. I think that was sort of the really interesting moment, like when it first appeared on the scene. Certainly Apple's popularized it, though.
And does it do the job that we're hiring it for? Is it at the point now where you can... For me, at least, it's not a primary interface, but it's made me so lazy that I don't want to type anymore. I don't want to even use a mouse or point or click or keyboard. As much as possible, I want to hit that little Siri button and just talk.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mixed benefit at times, because you can't really... It's kind of hard to sort of build a shopping list with it, or it's kind of, you know, it's a little bit more cumbersome. I'd certainly use it for like setting timers and little reminders and that kind of thing. I think that the model of the interaction is good, though. The conversation, where you give it an input and it goes away and thinks about it and then comes back or something, and it retains context while you're interacting with it. I think that is a good model, and I think that's going to become more broad and more of a way of interacting with machines in the future.
Yeah, look, I love Siri. I agree. It's all about being contextual and being just augmenting what we already have. I guess the part that excites me is trying to work out what the future of interaction is for people using computers for creation. And I don't mean that as a slur on tablets and multi-touch devices, because I think they do a great job. But I want to know what I'll be using to actually design, you know, in 10 years' time. So I don't know. I don't know if we've seen that yet. It seems maybe it could work. If anyone's seen, you know, Jeff Hand's multi-touch demo from 2006, I think it was, the TED mm-hmm. talk, looked amazing. I really want that, but I don't know if that's actually, is that going to be the future, or is it going to be something else?
Well, I hate to be the guy to make the Iron Man reference first, but I mean, if we look at any of the recent movies, it was a sort of a Jarvis was this hybrid of Siri-like natural language and holographic multi-touch gesture, sort of everything spun together into this ultimate inventor, designer, dream interface.
Yeah. I think it's also very interesting how a lot of these technologies that are being innovated in right now are kind of augmenting the existing awesome things we already have. You know, how Siri is just a component of this crazy awesome multi-touch pad we have in our pocket. Likewise, we could really build something really cool with all sorts of combinations of... Kinect already does that, actually. Kinect is a voice control plus using gestures to control the interface. It's much less of a primary input and much more augmenting the existing ones.
How does that work for you? Because I have a Kinect and I have like the Dance Dance games and stuff like that. And it seems to vary a lot by title, how well the interface is executed and how big the gesture targets are and how simple the voice commands are.
Yeah, I don't think it works very well as it is right now. It's also, you know, with Siri and those gesture kind of things, it's as good as its best implementation. I mean, Siri's awesome. It's like magic. But the moment she misunderstands my message and starts calling the wrong person, you know, it's like the magic's broken. And you're like, no, stupid thing, wait, stop. Crap.
Yeah, that's exactly my problem with Siri. Like, I can't trust it, so I can't use it. And it, I mean, I don't think Apple quite trusts it either. You know, if you want to send a message to someone, Siri will read it back to you before sending it. You know, it's so tedious, just the thought of going through that process, that I'd rather just type the message out. So yeah. I end up just doing that most of the time.
Yeah, but when it works, oh man. I used it yesterday to, you know, I was just in a hurry, didn't have time to really type something out, and thought, what the hell, give it a shot. And it was absolutely flawless. So yeah, I'm exactly the same as you guys, whereas you kind of get burned when it doesn't work, and then you get frustrated and you have to actually go and do it the manual way, unlock your phone, whatever. Whereas, yeah, when it does actually work, it's phenomenal.
I gave both my little godchildren iPod Touches for the holidays. One is 4 and 1 is 7, and they just treat Siri like their friend. They'll just press that button and talk, and they don't really care what the response is. They're delighted that there is a response. So for them already at their age, natural language is as normal as certainly as multi-touch input, and I don't think they've used a keyboard or a mouse, you know, very often, if at all.
One thing I kind of like about Siri is that you can still use it to like give yourself a reminder, because even if it doesn't quite understand what you said, you can kind of figure it out after, like when you're looking at the message, like, oh yeah, phonetically that sort of makes sense. So it kind of works. I wouldn't trust if anything important, certainly. So I haven't really used a Kinect, but the technology fascinates me. Does it work? Like, is it up to your expectations?
I think it's pretty cool. I think for now it's still very much a V1.0, where it's like it's a really cool thing, and it kind of works nicely for navigating the interface while sitting on your couch. You can sort of swipe through the panels on Xbox. I feel like it really needs to be perfected. For me right now, it's much more of a marketable proof of concept and a gimmick rather than a genuine input method. And it was kind of hilarious to see how that really came, kind of became part of a joke when they demonstrated it on stage. And he was like, this guy showed off how he could make his avatar move, and he said bang, and his avatar contorted into this crazy yoga pose. It was sort of a caricature of the technology itself. And that's why I'm actually excited about Mio, this thing which was announced today. Because I feel like it could be much more precise. Precision is really important in gesture stuff like this.
Well, I found interesting with the Xbox, I mean, a couple of years ago, I was at a really well-known GPS maker's briefing, and one of the questions asked was, why isn't this stuff just listening all the time? Why can't I just say a couple words and it suddenly wakes up? And they said, well, mobile devices, the battery life's not there yet. If we leave the mic on listening all the time, that's a drain. And then you start to have bad battery life and you complain and you blame us. And Android is starting to do that now. There are like Samsung's devices will wake up if you say the right words to them. And there's other new, I think Google Glass is going to do that as well. But the Xbox is plugged in. Conceivably, an Apple box would be plugged in. And then battery concerns go away, and you can really have these sensors alive all the time.
Yeah, I'm really curious what the interface for a potential Apple TV could look like. I mean, I guess it could be voice, but... yeah, I hope it actually works.
Yeah, it'd have to be damn near perfect if it was voice.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like that'd be a big bet to make to just have voice. That, you know, I mean, I assume Apple's, you know, I'm sure everyone here knows this, but Apple's quite a conservative company, so they really generally don't go too far out on a limb, although at the same time.
Buttonless shuffle, Mark, buttonless shuffle.
Yeah, that's true. So it makes me think that if they did ship something with Siri, they'd probably also have either an IR remote or something else like it, which would be great. That could work.
I'd be happy if it was just the same remote but Bluetooth. That's all I want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we also, I think we spoke about this on Debug a couple weeks ago, that one of the challenges Apple face is that they don't own the core technology. It's all Nuance, and I believe it just sits on Nuance boxes. And that's why we don't get on-device voice control. Like, you just can't say make an alarm and it just makes the alarm. It has to go hit Nuance's servers and come back. And Google was smart enough at least to get one of the guys who owned patents in this area that was out, or at least wasn't in the line of fire of Nuance, to get Google Now. So Google Now gives you all that on-device voice recognition. And to me, that the speed of that, the instantaneity, is that a real word? Instantaneity of that really makes a huge difference. And I wonder how Apple's going to bridge that gap if they want to start making more responsive devices.
Yeah, I think that's a kind of a hard nut to crack, really, because Nuance does really have all of that wrapped up. See, I think the natural language input is interesting, but it's not the end of the story. I think a lot of stuff's going to start using sort of computer vision in order to like input into similar kind of systems, and all of that kind of stuff is also going to have to go out and hit servers and do some thinking on a big server farm.
So you're talking about camera input and doing recognition based on image.
Yeah, I think that's where we will end up going. Yeah, like right now it's just audio only, but I could see taking a photo or pointing the camera at something and asking what is this, and getting a helpful response back. But that will always require a network connection and will always require a big server thing. And I think Google has a big leg up in this area.
All the augmented reality apps and Google goggles and all that have been trying that. And as you said, it's almost like Star Trek where they have to go back to the main computer for all the answers.
Yeah. And it's not there now and it's kind of gimmicky and stuff, but you know, I think eventually we're going to see that kind of interaction happen more often.
There was an announcement today that LG was buying all the WebOS, not the patents necessarily, but they bought a lot of the WebOS team and they bought a lot of the WebOS technology and they want to use it for smart TVs. Now, I don't want to run across the room and multi-touch my cards and stacks on a television set, but Mark, you were wondering whether multi-touch and, you know, Leap Connect style non-contact gestures could live together.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, are they separate paths and they'll be independently developed or can they work together? I guess for me, again, that the really exciting part is where we go from multi-touch. I think there's a lot more bandwidth. And while I like natural language, visually a lot more can be conveyed, you know, obviously assuming you're not talking about someone who's visually impaired. So I just wonder if there's potential for not only multi-touch where you're actually fingers on glass, but sort of hovering above or something else like Leap Motion, if the smart ways they can work together or if they're separate. So if you guys have thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. WebOS itself, its gestures to me have always felt among the most natural of any touch OS. They really had it down. And it would have actually not translate that poorly to a big screen experience if you were to have some sort of perfect technology that tracks your, say, hand gesture. You could switch through channels by sort of swiping through them. And if you want to get rid of one, you could literally make that sort of dismissive hand upward gesture and be like, ah, this sucks. And it would just fly off the screen, which is what you could do with apps. It was very satisfying, actually, quitting apps like that. But yeah, at the same time, that being said, it really, like for WebOS, it started falling apart because of poor hardware. Like it iOS excels so much at multi-touch because its registration of touch is so immediate and so accurate, that if they can't nail technology to combine, like that experience into one really smooth thing, it's not gonna be great.
And the early Google TVs said they started with those monstrous controllers instead of any kind of natural language interface or gesture-based interface.
Yeah, that was really bad.
Yeah, that Sony remote will probably go down in history as one of the worst ideas ever. I think. Horrible.
Unless NORAD buys them all and repurposes them.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole other side to this touchscreen thing. I mean, we're still, I mean, who coined the term? Just like fingers over glass. There's You know, I mean, you want some kind of Victor, I think. You want some kind of feedback. I mean, you know, like what was that company that was working on the electrostatic forces, you know, coming back through the touchscreen? So like you had different textures and stuff.
Different kinds of haptics, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't. I mean, is it technically haptics? I always associate haptic with like the cheesy vibrations.
Next generation
haptics.
There was a rumor around. There's always a rumor around Apple launch time, but there was a rumor. Yeah, that company was doing things where you'd be able to feel literally a different kind of material underneath your finger when the electrons were lined up differently.
Yeah, I want to know, like, can you project that outside the screen? So can I feel something before my finger actually, you know, makes contact with the glass?
If you implant rare earth magnets in the tips of your fingers. Which is, I guess, another kind of sensor, because there were those articles about the rare earth magnets being put into people's fingertips and they would use those to detect electromagnetic fields in their vicinities.
Sure. I mean, maybe you wouldn't even have to go through surgery. Like you just like dip your fingers in like an inkwell and it puts a metallic or some kind of magnetic ink on your fingers so you can, you know, feel these things and interact with the device a little bit more personally. I don't know.
Guy, it sounds like a lot of this stuff is outside the box. We've for generations have been controlling and being controlled by what's in the box, and all this stuff seems to finally bring the interface and the interaction outside of those little, you know, six or four or three dimensional constraints.
Yeah, well, I think that's sort of the inevitable direction that things are going to go, right? The devices are getting smaller and smaller all the time. So you're going to end up naturally sort of having to interact with it from not just its surface area, but around it and in the space that you occupy with the device, I think. certainly all of these sensors are new because they're becoming cheap enough now that we can stick, you know, cameras and multiple microphones and a whole bunch of other, you know, magnetic sensors, all kinds of stuff into like tiny devices. And I think that's really what's sort of informing or that's going to drive what the future provides.
It's interesting because the box is becoming the brain, this little tiny thing that you carry around. And when Lauren was on Debug, when we were talking about Google Now and the experience that they give by starting to put together these sensors in a predictive way, like the GPS works with your calendar, works with your clock to start telling you not only provide answers to questions you ask, but predict what you're going to ask based on your location, your time, and what's in your agenda.
Well, I think context plus sensors gives a really interesting possibilities.
And that's it, really. I mean, all of this stuff has been triggered by new sensors and cheap sensors, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's so it's definitely I definitely feel like it's the hardware leading the software, not the other way around. I mean, obviously the software is where a lot of the experimentation comes, and you know, a lot of these things get invented without necessarily knowing all the executions, and that's the execution is typically in the software, but it's certainly. It seems like it's always been hardware features that have brought on the new eras.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of this whole evolution too. It's of course sort of the silent background. Like there's all the whiz bang of new technological advances with cool sensors and stuff. But in the meantime, you also see everything being integrated much more tightly. You know, there's finally a way to just stream your entire screen of your phone or tablet to your TV. It's that much easier to just push data around between all these devices. Essentially, every device you own is just a window into this one entity. Like, let's say, if you have a Google account, that's just one big sort of organism that you communicate with that presents you all the information, gives you all the information. Now it's just becoming trivial to push it to whichever, you know, device you want to use it on.
And it looks like things are becoming smart everywhere. Now the vacuum cleaner, I think it was LG and Samsung were showing off vacuum cleaners and refrigerators and ovens and everything that are running Android now, and that your phone links into it and they can basically be, the phone becomes a way to control these things. So if, you know, your husband or wife calls and says, can I bring my boss over for dinner? You can hit a button on your phone and your oven turns on to preheat for the pizza, and the little Roomba-like vacuum cleaner comes out and cleans the carpets, and then the refrigerator goes, beep, beep, hey, buddy, you're out of milk. You better pick that up on your way home, or she's not going to be very impressed with you. And you start getting back almost as, like, these sensors are detecting this information, but then they're pushing it all very quickly at you, which never happened before.
Yeah, it's true. We actually have an Android-powered coffee maker here in the office.
Really? What does it do?
Not very much, but it can play music.
Which version of Android OS is it running?
it's Gingerbread, sadly.
Why did you buy that? No, it's kind of a joke question, but I'm kind of serious too, because I want to know what the value is to having a smart coffee maker, and if it's sort of just more like a fad, and you know, because maybe that will inform sort of the discussion we're having, like. Is a smart fridge a thing that anybody actually cares about?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we got it because it's just one in many Android devices we have. And honestly, with all the Android devices I'm seeing on a desk next to me right now, it's a question you can ask for most of them because they're pretty preposterous in shape and size, some of them. But as far as smart connected devices go, I think there is definitely like something very promising there, but I feel like it's a field we've been struggling with for so long, like home automation, the smart home, et cetera. I mean, there's no real simple solution to this problem of making dumb things smart.
That's not a problem with hardware. I mean, you know, that's a problem with software. Like all of this stuff is still really hobbled together. I mean, even syncing data between devices, I mean, it's duct tape, it's spit and duct tape. Mm-hmm. That's humanity's stumbling block right now. I mean, you know, we could have all the sensors in the world, but if we can't tie the data together, you know, what good is it?
Two things. One is if I can walk down a corridor and have those little droids hit my ankles like they did in Star Wars, I don't care. It's just so cool. But second, I think that brings up an important point. There's a whole back end that needs to drive all these, both the machines and the software we see on the front end. And you've been speaking about this a lot, Lauren, but right now it seems like that data is very pull to me, almost like the Google Now discussion where I have to know where to look. I have to go to my device, open an app, or look for a widget, and that's a lot of activity on my part. It's not bringing that stuff to me. Are we advancing far enough, fast enough on the server side to actually flip that model so where the data is pushing and it's going to where I am so that it can handle all these next generation, you know, modalities?
Yeah, I think Google's skirting. I mean, the ultimate, you know, the place humanity ultimately gets to is, you know, these things will read our minds. I mean, that's the ultimate input device, right? And Google is kind of doing that without needing sensors. And I think that's really exciting. They're basically predicting what you might want. So they can read your mind without having to actually read your mind.
Does that work, Guy? Does that scale? Is there a point where the machine has enough data to be able to accurately model what you might need? Or is that always going to be fuzzy logic at best?
You know, that's sort of a philosophical question at some point, right? Like, because effectively the solution is sentience. I think we can get close enough that it does a good enough job. And sort of like I was saying with the notes in Siri that, you know, while the words aren't quite right, they're good enough and you can just deal with it. I think we can get there. And I think it looks like Google Now is kind of a pretty promising first step in that direction.
And Google Now is still bound. I mean, it's bound to the phones, but that has to be temporary. We have BlackBerry. The new BlackBerry 10 is based on QNX, and that runs nuclear power plants. But it also happens to run a lot of cars, including the new Bentley. And Microsoft has invested heavily in Sync, which is on Ford and other cars. And, you know, Apple is doing a little bit of Siri integration in cars, and it looks like they're starting to put the technology where we are. We don't have to go and get a specific device anymore, but this kind of interface and technology is going to go where we are already.
It's interesting to think about the way that, like, at what point, like, where's the computer in that sort of scenario?
I don't know if you remember it, but years ago at CES, when Bill Gates was still doing CES keynotes, which tells you how long ago it was, and Microsoft used to do these really famous aspirational keynotes where they would show technology that everybody knew was not going to come to market. But it was still like he would walk in there with his Windows mobile phone and he would say, like, this is the future. And he would put the phone down and the phone would immediately broadcast his environment to his computer. And it would just be one thing. Everything, every setting, every personalization was suddenly his computer. And then he would pick it up again and go in the living room. And because his phone was now in the living room, the TV knew to come on and to go to what channel he wanted. And he basically carried his entire computing environment in one device, but that device was seamlessly interconnected with all the other ones. And I guess the question is, do we even need that device? Is that the cloud? And is that at any point going to be a reality?
I mean, I think that's absolutely going to be a reality. I mean, it doesn't really matter which device you're running on. You know, with good enough, obviously this is a stretch, with good enough software and protocols, you know, there's no reason why that Android coffee maker couldn't, you know, we couldn't be using its spare CPU cycles to be doing some useful work for us. You know, obviously we wouldn't be doing it, you know, telling it what to do. It would just kind of just be, you know, picking up the work from some global job queue.
Yeah, massive grid computing on an appliance scale.
Yeah.
I guess the with some of this stuff, it requires a lot of hard work for the execution to work. Say, you know, your phone knowing which room you're in may mean you have to have some kind of Bluetooth network in every room or whatever. Whereas it seems like the place we usually end up is where the execution is not incredibly overbearing, where it's kind of you end up with a cute solution that sort of works most of the time that doesn't require, say, your entire house to be wired up a certain way or to have something running in every room. So I guess that's probably – maybe that's why we're stumbling around a little bit until someone, you know, someone's light bulb turns on and we work out a way where you get sort of most of the benefit, really low cost, that doesn't require – massive retrofitting. I mean, as you guys have mentioned, or as Ram mentioned about Microsoft's demos, there's been a lot of smart home stuff previously where, as cool as it is, it requires the entire house to be built that way from the ground up. And I don't...
Projectors everywhere.
Yeah. And as cool as that stuff is, it just doesn't seem practical or something that's going to happen for most people, unlike smartphones that are now... Obviously, it's just this one slab of metal and glass and whatever else is in there that anyone can buy for either free with a contract or a few hundred dollars. And it does a lot without really anything more. So I think all of these solutions are probably going to end up being quite cheap and simple, just because if anything's going to be mainstream, it sort of has to be, really. I mean, that's the definition of the way these things typically work with disruption and change.
Yeah, I think it'll have to be an incremental outbuilding. I agree. I think the software and protocols are going to be important.
And I think that's also going to get them horribly wrong. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're going to be awful for sure.
Yeah, and we're going to have to live with it for 20 or 50 years, and then hopefully someone will come along and build a better version of it.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of have that with X10 now, and what's the other one? Like the stuff that you can communicate with.
Oh, Z-Wave.
Zigbee. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got some like X10 stuff here for, I don't know why. I was trying to beat Tony Stark and it's a bad idea. And it's like, it's so problematic and really screwed up. One funny thing is like, so I had my lights in my bedroom were controlled by it at one point. And I wrote like a little app on my phone that would go over Wi-Fi and talk to like a Mac Mini that was plugged into you had like a USB connection into the network, into this X10 network. And my provisioning profile expired, so I couldn't turn my lights on. So that kind of stank. not very Tony Stark when you can't turn your own lights on.
Yeah, maybe there needs to be a movie like that where, you know, technology doesn't quite work and there's issues and they have to deal with that.
Yeah.
Pretty funny.
It's the
futuristic comedy.
I think really keeping things as simple as possible and building out slowly, like you were suggesting, is what has to happen. We there can't be like a top-down orchestrated sort of switch over to anything smart and fancy.
I spoke to Ford at CES 2 or 3 years ago, and it was before a lot of the innovation we see now. And they said, you know, we have cars that can do amazing things now. They can almost drive themselves, but those cars scare the shit out of people. Nobody wants to go anywhere near them. They're afraid of them. So we have to be very careful. We have to introduce one thing, like maybe it's proximity detection, and then one more thing, like parallel parking, and do it very slowly and let people become adjusted and comfortable to it. Because if we just unleash these smart cars, no, people are going to be at them with pitchforks and shotguns. They're going to think it's Terminator 2 time. And I think that's true of a lot of this technology, is that it's great for geeks, but it sort of has to be slowly mixed into mainstream culture.
Yeah, it's true. And also, the creepy factor is a really big one. I think that's one of the things that makes Google now so magical, for lack of a better word, is that A, you don't have to put any of your information into it, and B, it doesn't overdo it. So it's not like, oh, I see you're going to the airport. Would you like me to send a text message to your wife kissing her goodbye? Yeah. And it's like, it doesn't go into that really, really crazy territory yet. It's just light and helpful. And yeah, like you said, it doesn't go overboard.
Well, that's the question with Google Glass, right? Is that this thing is on you all the time, seeing what you're seeing, hearing what you're hearing, and it's your trust in Google's ethics that make you think that it's not, you know, honey, take that off. I told you not to wear that in bed. And people are going to have to get past that barrier.
Yeah, I have a hard time thinking. I don't know. I'm skeptical. I mean, I kind of want to try one for myself, but I wouldn't trust being in a room with someone else wearing it, because I don't know what they're recording.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a light, though, doesn't it, to say when it's recording?
Well, you sort of see light bounce around in the prism. But as a viewer, it's kind of really hard to notice anything, really. It's pretty faint.
Yeah, it's creepy stuff.
Yeah. It's really creepy stuff, yeah.
I mean, the motivation is another interesting point. I mean, we can want certain things, and certain things can be possible, but obviously these things are expensive and difficult to develop and, you know, take years and years. For companies to develop them, there has to be significant motivation, and those motivations may not align with the users. So there's kind of that as well.
Well, so, I mean, this is the greatest data collector ever, right? So if your business is aligned along data collection and that's how you do all the rest of it, then this is almost a dream product. It's the universal funnel just gets everything.
Literally putting video cameras and microphones on people's faces. I mean, it's a wet dream.
And then it's like the iWatch, the rumors that Apple is going to get into wearable technology. And sometimes these rumors are just because there's this idea of wearable technology, and then every major company has to have some foot in the door. And, you know, most major companies are smart enough to prototype ideas for what look like next generation products. But it's interesting, the different approach where one is on your face and one is conceivably, I don't know, like a band around your wrist or a Star Trek communicator sort of device, but it's still every bit as wearable.
I think I'd go for a watch before glasses, but even then I don't want a watch necessarily. I don't know what it's going to do. Like I'm not excited by that sort of form factor. I don't know if anybody else is.
No, I don't understand. The thing is, I don't get why I'd want another screen, because the screen on my iPhone is pretty damn good, and it's reasonably big for something you carry on you. So I think a lot of these devices, I don't mind them being smart and having, you know, networking and whatever else, like a Fitbit might be Bluetooth and in your pocket and measuring steps. That's really cool. That's good data to have, but I don't necessarily know that I need something that's as smart or as powerful as a phone.
Yeah,
so I don't get the watch.
It seems awfully persistent for technology right now. Like we like phones so much because we can just lock the screen and put them in our pocket. And especially the glasses seem like something only a geek would dream up. It's like you have a computer in your front of your face all the time. You know, it's like, yeah, that's really cool. But like, who really wants that? Like, we actually want to, you know, not have a computer all the time.
I mean, that's the interesting dichotomy for this product. I mean, on one side, it could be like an Apple TV, like a hobby, that it just increases the ecosystem and it provides one more outlet for the devices we already have. But there's this persistent thread in Apple where they seem to be relentless in democratizing their technology and making it simpler in some ways, but more accessible. So you go from the Apple II to the Mac to the iPad or to iOS. And then for some people, they still won't need even what a phone or a tablet provides. And for them, having a watch that can do very simple things, albeit, you know, auto magical things, could be the only sort of connected device that they need.
I mean, if they do, I have no idea what they're going to make. But if they do a watch, I imagine it would be an accessory, like a Bluetooth accessory to a phone. It couldn't be a standalone device. There's just no way. And could they get away without having a screen at all? I mean, you know, these other wrist-worn things are useful without screens. I mean, I don't own any. I don't know what they do, but it seems like you could automate a whole bunch of things in your life if you have that kind of data. There's no need for it to go to some cloud. You know, it could all be processed locally.
Is it one of those things, though, that we don't know that we need it until, like, I've never tried Google Glass. I mean, I've seen it, but am I going to put those on and then wonder how I never lived without it? Am I going to strap on an Apple iWatch or iBand and then walk out of my house without my phone for the first time in 3 years and say, boy, how did I live without this?
No, I think the phone would have to be in your pocket for the watch to do its cool stuff, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think, if anything, it'll be Bluetooth. It's not going to have its own cell radio and all that kind of jazz.
Yeah.
You know, presuming it exists. But yeah, I just don't see the point of it. Like, even those straps that they had for the nanos and those pebble things, I don't get it. It's not a big deal to look at my phone if I really want to see if I've got an email. I don't need it on my wrist all the time.
Well, it's less disruptive. I mean, you want to get information as quick as, you know, close to your brain as possible. And like it's a slight inconvenience to have to take your phone out of your pocket. You know, if you can glance down at your wrist. I mean, Google Glass solves the problem by putting the information in your face all the time, which, you know, might be a step too far, but a watch, you know, you're capable of glancing at it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's really, but I mean, quick. It's no there's no context switching required.
Yeah, that's true. But a watch to me is almost like jewelry at this point. And I don't know. I don't like seeing everybody with the same watch. Just feels a little weird to me. It's almost like dystopian future style. Everybody's got this like weird one gadget that's strapped to them at all times.
Or one set of Cyclops specs across their eyes.
Right. I mean, we're there now. I mean, you have a line of people waiting for the bus, all staring down at their phones. I mean,
that's true.
That's a dystopian future right there.
Yeah, that's depressing. I don't know. There's something about wearable computing that kind of rubs me the wrong way for some reason, and I can't put my finger on it.
What's your beef with wearable computing, Guy?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I can't put my finger on it. That's because I'm wearing it, so I can't actually touch it.
But what if it wasn't actually a watch or glasses that were, again, they were kind of dumber things, but it was stuff that was, you know, maybe part of your clothes or whatever. So it was more for, say, health monitoring like Fitbit or something where it maybe
smart monitors. Smart shoes.
Yeah, smart shoes, something like that, rather than being something... so, you know, something you're more in control of rather than surveillance.
I guess, I'd be more comfortable with that, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being weird, old man, fuddy-duddy type of thinking. But I don't see a lot of value. Like, I don't know where that's going, per se.
Well, I mean, is the phone a long-term thing? Are we going to have these slabs in our hands, or are they going to move to? Because, you know, in Star Wars and Star Trek, there's no phone word. There's like communicator. Mm-hmm. Are we going to have little doohickeys or brooches or, you know, I don't know, built subdermal implants that take the role of communication away from a phone?
Or not even communication, but like, I mean, eventually we're going to need some kind of authenticator, even if it's just an authenticator, you know, to turn on someone else's screen so it was ours. You know, I imagine we need some kind of physical device with us.
Yeah, that makes sense. I could see that. That would actually, like the brooch, or I could understand a watch from that point of view as an authentication thing.
If I could walk up to a computer and it's just my Photoshop setup, no matter what computer it is, I would be blissfully happy.
Yeah. Can we have a ring instead?
One ring.
One ring. Green, just a big green ring.
But that's it. I mean, sci-fi often... It doesn't always. It's one of those things where there's so many ideas put out that eventually some of them coincidentally will be accurate, but they're all these models in science fiction for where we go next and how we, I mean, Firefox, not the browser, but the plane, you could think to it in Russian and it would launch missiles. And, you know, you had talking computers in Star Trek before we had Siri. And it just seems like there's so much out there that we're, I don't know, scratching and clawing our way towards.
Yeah. Groping.
Groping blindly.
Yeah, it's more sort of what it feels like,
out of the primordial ooze of computing.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be nice if there was some kind of, you know, concerted effort to do it properly, but I don't think anyone really knows the way it's going to. I mean, this is the only way, you know, we as a species kind of know how to do it.
Right.
That's that whole, you know, pendulum between integrated and modular, isn't it? So someone, it'll be integrated and they'll be, you know, by a company. And then I guess eventually over time, there'll be enough parts cobbled together that maybe the modular solution ends up being better or better for society, of benefit to the users rather than maybe a company. And then maybe that's when it goes back and that's when you end up with, you know, standards. I guess it's very similar to web and native and, you know, obviously there's a lot of benefits in being integrated when there's innovation happening. And then later on, as innovation isn't as needed, then, you know, things can shift back and be a little bit more open.
It's funny because I like that people are trying. As soon as Apple put out a Nano that you could make into a watch, people made wristbands and they started wearing them as watches. And then Motorola put out the Motorola Active, which was essentially a Nano watch. And now Samsung has announced a wearable version of Galaxy something or other. And, you know, Apple's not almost never a first mover in these areas, at least not lately. But a lot of other companies don't mind experimenting and trying and coming up. And even if they fail, at least it's out there and we've had a look at it and we can start figuring out what works and what doesn't. I mean, Pebble's a great example of that. I think originally they made a BlackBerry watch, just connected and showed you your BlackBerry notifications, and now they're trying to make a cross-platform watch.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out where that kind of thing is going to go. Because, again, like the tight integration is sort of required, but it's also kind of limits what the device is and can be, I think, if that makes any sense.
But is that a now problem? Is that something that we're, you know, a couple of years from now and we'll have radios and everything powerful enough to carry around in super tiny format?
Well, it's a now problem, but it's a platform problem too. It's, you know, there's limitations on the way that there's cool things that we could do that we don't do because it's very vertically challenging. There's a giant cliff in order to get there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Like it's not a compelling enough product or there's not enough leeway in the platform. Because I don't think anybody except Apple could make some kind of watch that really worked well with the phone.
Or at least a mainstream one. There'll be a lot of nerdy variants that were really powerful, but maybe have smaller footprints.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, exactly.
They might be able to. I mean, they've been beefing up the Bluetooth stack recently. And if they expose enough surface area, you could do some interesting things.
Yeah, that's true. But you still won't. It's like you're not going to be getting the iMessages on it.
Well, no, I'm saying they could expose that somehow.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me, how we make sure that all these new machines retain their humanity. I mean, I use Siri and I dictate something and I get purple dot, purple dot, purple dot, nothing. And it's infuriating. Or I try to gesture on an Xbox and the way that it indicates my gesture was successful is so small I can barely see it. How do we make sure that we don't lose the human part of the interface?
Well, who's to say that's a bad thing? I mean, I guess underlying all this, I've been thinking, you know, with all these like increasingly efficient interfaces, you know, what are we enabling with them? You know, I mean, we exist as individuals, like in the friction of the universe. You know, if everything is frictionless, you know, what's the point? So, I don't know. Maybe that was unrelated.
No, it's deep, but. I think that's a good way of thinking about it. It's what is it like? What's the problem that we're actually trying to solve with this stuff?
It's usually to make life easier and to be happier, right? I mean, that's the or certainly how they're sold.
Sure.
Quite often.
Yeah, and when it comes to these technologies, I'd say taking away abstractions that stand between you and whatever data you're interacting with. Like, you know, if you look at all those motion controllers and Kinect and stuff, they're just trying to make it quote unquote natural for you to use your hands to move, well, say cards or games or movies or whatever you're interacting with, without the intermediate of a controller or a surface with a touchscreen or et cetera, et cetera.
So it's trying to get you closer to the software, really, is and it's whichever input method has accuracy and gets you the closest as possible to the software is probably the one that wins.
Yeah. So doesn't that sort of imply that the for a lot of cases, sort of the conversational interface that Siri represents or employs, isn't that closer to what we want, really? We just want to say do this and just goes and gets done.
I think the accuracy and the bandwidth is very, very different for natural interfaces. If you're trying to, and again, this is purely because most of what we do is based around 2D screens. But if you're trying to target a button or a pixel or a bunch of pixels, that's really, really difficult to do. If you've got someone standing next to you and you're trying to get them to put their finger on a certain region, you're explaining it to them in natural language, even with someone who's, you know, a native English speaker who's been speaking it for 30 years, it's going to be awkward. Whereas if you actually had a mouse or, you know, multi-touch, you can kind of say that's the one. So maybe the benefit is more in combining these things. So the multi-touch could give context, whereas the voice could be the command or something. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anybody does. It's what kind of makes it interesting to think about.
Yeah, we'll see a lot of people really creatively completely screwing up in the next decade, no doubt.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is what makes it so scary exciting. Because these things are often, like, you look back in hindsight and they look like such sensible, logical solutions, but then you look at the utter chaos and turbulence that it took to get there. And sometimes just through rose-colored glasses, we just, you know, we kind of forget how much pain there was when each of these new paradigms came out. But now I think we're actually going through one of those things again now, and it seems like we're going faster. The time between punch cards and command lines and graphical user interfaces and multi-touch user interfaces and natural language seems to, at least to me, to be shrinking, and at least the concepts are coming faster.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I'm struggling with, I'm trying to work out, is are 2D screens or vaguely 2D screens going to be around forever? And if they are, what's the what's the quickest way to give some kind of visual input? I mean, I definitely think these other things, the sensors and the outside the box things, are definitely going to expand and flourish over the next whatever 5-10 years. But I'm trying to also work out what about the actual the main devices, not the ancillary devices. What's that going to look like? And if 2D screens are in fact what we're going to be stuck with for the next, you know, foreseeable future, is there anything better than multi-touch?
He's asking you, Guy, as the resident game developer, whether we're going to be getting holodecks anytime soon.
Holodecks are also creepy. I don't know. I think that, yeah, 2D screens are going to be around for a long, long time. We're not going to get... because they're useful and they work like the real world does. I think the leap is going to be interesting. I think we're going to see that kind of technology get into sort of be built into laptops, into the trackpad of laptops, I think.
That would have been better, arguably, for the Chromebook. Maybe it's too early, but the Chromebook Pixel, where you're now touching, multi-touching your screen, I think leap technology there would be interesting.
Yeah, I do actually think that you being able to touch your screen directly is should be supported, and it you know, software should be developed in so that can happen. Not required. Like, you don't want, again, you don't want people reaching out and holding their hand up trying to mess with the screen because it's impractical. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to just touch something if you want to.
In a post iPad world, it seems almost like an instinct to do it.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess it depends on what you mean by foreseeable future. But I mean, I see this stuff, you know, accelerating in fits. You know, but I mean, I personally don't want to spend my life behind a rectangle. You know, it'd be nice if my entire world was, you know, the medium through which I created stuff. And I mean, just specifically, you know, you see things like the Oculus Rift, and, you know, it's the first, you know, practical virtual reality headset. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's like, you know, built in a basement prototype. I mean, I think some stuff like that's going to get better fast.
The Oculus is basically a big headset you put on. And do you guys know exactly how it works? Does it just project things where you expect to look, or is it watching your eyes where they're moving?
I think it's just like a display in front of your face, you know, that pretty much covers your field of vision.
I think there are two small displays in front of your eyes.
Small, yeah, two small. Yeah.
And it's really good at one-to-one mapping?
I think it's just gyroscope as well. I think it's, mm-hmm. you know, there's nothing... I mean, I'm sure it's amazing, but this, in terms of technology we've seen, I don't think it's necessarily anything spectacular. It's more the way it was put together and the fact that it exists rather than, you know, not existing. Like,
what's your take on that?
I would love to try one, but it seems slick.
Do you think, Guy, like putting that kind of thing on your head is intermediate term solutions, or are we going to have giant surround projectors take over from that? Where is that heading?
You can't really have a giant room projector thing because it's huge and the 3D aspect depends on your point of view. So you're basically getting a holodeck if you try to do that. I think, you know, yeah, I think we'll see those sort of bands, that sort of Oculus Rift kind of thing. But still, it'll be – it's alienating, right? Because it takes you out of the world.
I don't think it needs to. I mean, I imagine – you know, this is, you know, a while in the future, but Google Glass coupled with a Mio, mm-hmm. You know, where it was legitimate augmented reality where, you know, you could do proper, you know, tracking and like overlays and stuff. But, you know, the most minute muscle movements were your input into the device and, you know, just overlays over the world where you're with the output from the device. I mean, you would be walking through the world, but you could be doing stuff at the same time. I mean, you know, this whole idea of going into like I think the whole idea of a holodeck is silly, you know, where it's a dedicated room with like huge machinery crafting this like elaborate simulation. You know, technology is getting smaller. You know, we don't need all that stuff. Eventually the technology is going to be so small as to disappear and we're going to be just interacting with, I don't know.
More this. Total Recall, less Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like natural extension of your body versus appliances.
And where does that take us, Seb? I mean, there's all these the people sitting in the Wall-E chairs, I guess, one of the famous examples. But it seems like technology is moving us both ways, because with the Kinect or with the Wii, we're moving now more than ever. With Nike Fuel Bands and Fitbits, it's encouraging us to move. And it seems like there's a dual tension where the technology is getting easier to use, but at the same time, it's making us use it in a more physical way.
Yeah, the species might split into those two camps.
One in the cloud city and one in the mines.
It'd be a very short war.
Well, no, I mean, we would be fighting with the robots, so who knows?
That's a good point.
Does it mean anything that all this technology is coming from young startups and not from older established technology companies?
I don't think so. I think that's just the way things work. I mean, like, Microsoft does a lot. I mean, the Kinect came from Microsoft, right? So it's not.
Yeah.
It's not like they're like the big companies don't do a lot of research. I just think that the bigger companies have different ideas. Like they're going in a different direction from smaller little companies.
And they're dragging all us legacy users, fuddy duddies behind.
Yeah,
them.
But I don't necessarily I don't see it as a negative thing per se. Like we're still getting all of these cool ideas, right?
Yeah, and they also have different thresholds. I mean, if Apple released something that's kind of a niche product that sells 100,000 units, it'd be deemed a failure. Whereas, you know, if some small startup sells 100,000 units, that's great. That's awesome. They may have just made a business that they can keep going for the next 20 years.
Yeah, and it's also it bears in mind that, you know, all the completely failed prototypes that are no doubt developed internally at Apple and Microsoft, et cetera, are probably really cool, but you know they're definitely not sitting on our asses either. They just have the liberty of snatching up all these companies that do really cool stuff.
This image in my head of these two guys sitting with headbands trying to play Mental Pac-Man still, you know, 10 years later trying to nail it.
Right, well, I think software is sort of the key for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Which we currently don't have because we don't really understand the problems yet.
You have to conceive it to write it? Is that where we're at, the impasse?
Well, you know, I think you build the mouse and then you've got like a simple mouse software.
Yeah.
And then years later, you sort of understand, oh, okay, well, here's how you can get the best use out of a mouse.
It's funny. That's so organic. You know, better tools make smarter people, make better tools make smarter people. It seems we're replicating that in technology.
I think like a lot of things, it's probably going to seem a lot more boring in reality than what's actually going to, you know, than the way we dream it to be. But obviously we'll get there in the end. So I think things won't look that different in 5 years' time. Yeah, I still think it's going to be 2D screens and probably multi-touch for quite a long time to come. But lots of interesting stuff around the edges.
I think computer vision is going to get more common and be interesting. Computer vision, including all the sort of the stuff that Kinect does, as well as stuff that you can point your phone and show it something and get information about it.
I think 5 years, it would be great to see something really, really amazing happen, but I think it's going to take a little longer.
I think we won't see a revolution displace touchscreens. I think we'll see it evolve. I think we'll see it have perhaps actual tactile feedback. That would be a really good development of it. And then newer products coming with, you know, great touch experiences and being augmented and that sell with the whiz bang of all these cool new gesture and other newfangled things.
I find that so interesting because all the big shifts so far have been fairly dramatic. We went from the punch cards to the Apple II like device to the Mac and Windows devices to all the multi-touch devices. And now we're seeing much more integration, like all the new stuff, natural language or auxiliary stuff. And I don't know if that's because it's like the Apple I or the Lisa and we're just not there yet, or whether it shows that we're not going to have one next answer, but we're going to have a more holistic, more rounded out solution that takes multiple forms of interface and puts them together, which I guess is kind of how humans work. So maybe that is the next evolution, is to stop making computers so unilaterally focused on one kind of input method.
Yeah, I think there'll be a spectrum of inputs and you'll use whichever is best suited to what you're working on at the time. Like if you're doing drawing, then you'll be, you know, either directly manipulating it or using a pointer. And if you, you know, maybe if you want to Google, you got a question that you want answered, Maybe you talk to it, or you know, or you show it a photo or something. But I think that like sensors, we're going to get a broad variety of input methods, and they'll all be suited to different tasks.
Jarvis, we're going to get Jarvis.
I hope so.
One thing we haven't talked about yet, I think battery technology seems like really, I mean, the main thing that's holding everything back, really. I mean,
battery technology
phones.
Is, yeah, that's it. That is the one thing that is stopping the human race from getting anything fancy done. Yeah.
I mean, you look at even phones we have, the iPad, they're basically, if there was no battery in there, or if there was a far, far smaller battery and lighter battery, there wouldn't really be much there apart from the screen. So, yeah, that sort of changes the what's possible with wearable computing and these other devices.
God, it's totally the limiting technology of our time.
Yeah. How much electricity does the human body generate? Like, I mean, as these devices get smaller, it could be a win-win. You know, we burn more calories so we can eat more, and we end up powering the devices at the same time.
So not only,
well, you have those watches that kinetically charge, right, where they take the motion of the swinging on your arm
sure.
and use that to power themselves.
Yeah,
sure. Is that enough juice for some of these things?
You're not sticking me in a matrix pod, Victor.
No, we're gonna put ourselves there.
Yeah. Basically, you want to be a Borg, is what I'm trying to understand. We're getting off here.
No, I'm just trying to grapple with the inevitability.
I guess as these things become lower powered too, yeah, sure. I mean, there's got to be interesting ways of powering them. Not sure how keen I am to having a computer strapped to my head and some giant electrode or needle in my thigh to power it. But but yeah, even, I mean, movement, we move all the time. Surely, yeah, hopefully that becomes enough, you know, solar and movement.
Yeah. I mean, the watch that I do wear is one, it's like a auto winding one from Kinetic Energy. And it's great. As long as I'm wearing it, I never have to wind it. And if we could capture some of that kind of ambient energy, I think we could do interesting things for sure. Anybody like robots?
I love me the robots.
No, I have no idea what robots are going to, if that's ever really going to be a thing, you know?
It's interesting because we try to make robots in our image, which is what any creator kind of does. But then the realities of where the technology is going might not. I mean, some people talk about insect robots, but it might just be their own thing at the end, where we have to, instead of making robots like us, we have to figure out how they can exist on their own. I think that's what, like, Jeff Hawkins does that Numenta stuff, and he's the guy from Palm who did Graffiti, because he realized that computers couldn't understand our handwriting. We had to change ourselves to write in a way they could understand, and now he's trying to apply that to the bigger sort of computer neural network things. And I think it's really interesting.
I mean, we might be building these like artificial beings in the wrong, I guess universe would be the right word. I mean, who's to say the internet itself isn't intelligent in some, you know, by some kind of definition?
Yeah, it's just speaking a language we don't understand.
Right. And it's very lonely.
And vengeful.
Well, I guess there's only a need for something to exist in the physical world, as in have motors and servos or whatever. If there's physical work that needs to be done, and I'm not sure how much need there is, except for maybe like, you know, military purposes. It seems like the benefit with a lot of these tools is more in you know, the other realm. It is in the thinking realm and the giant database realm, rather than actually, you know, digging a trench.
Yeah, I agree with that. Although I did just have a really cool mental image of my iPhone being kind of like a pet, and when I lose it in my apartment, I can just call it and it comes running.
sort of like a Michael Bay robot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is really interesting. And what's funny is the fear that we have culturally associated all this stuff. I mean, from Terminator to The Matrix to Lawnmower Man to HAL from 2001, we never have one of these utopian technological futures without there being some form of horrible judgment, apocalyptic day sitting at the end of it. And I wonder if that's cautionary or it's just the nature of humanity that we want this stuff but kind of are afraid of it at the same time.
Yeah, perhaps we're pre-programmed to make sure that the robots don't rise up against us.
We have the three laws. We're done. We're in good shape. Guy, where can we find out more about you?
I'm at GTE on Twitter and ADN, which apparently got really popular today. I don't know what happened.
Free tier. They announced a free tier of service.
Oh, that's it. Okay. And Kicking Bear is my website.
Mark Edwards on Twitter. That's Mark with a C. Mark on app.net and Bojango.com for all of our stuff.
I'm SDW on Twitter, also on ADN and icondesigner.net. It's one word.
Lauren B on Twitter and 8bits.com.
And will you say on the record that Letterpress is not becoming sentient anytime soon?
No, I promise it's not.
Thank you, guys. That was fantastic. I think this is one of the most interesting topics we've ever discussed, and I'm really eager to see if the technology can live up to all our expectations.
Or fears.
Yeah. I don't want to be disappointed by the future, Guy.
Yeah.